CF United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
My name is Vince Bonfanti. I'm the president of New Atlanta, the makers of Blue Dragon. I assume that everyone is here because they've heard of Blue Dragon, so I don't need to go into more detail about what that is. Good news and bad news first. The good news is this talk is going to be all about Blue Dragon 7 features. These are all features that I'm going to show you that either are already implemented or will be implemented by the time the Blue Dragon beta is released, probably in early August. And this is the features that I show you refer to all the Blue Dragon editions, not just the .NET editions. And the reason I say that is because the title of this presentation mentioned Blue Dragon on .NET cool tricks. Well, it's going to be more than just .NET. The bad news is that if you read the blurb about this presentation, it talks about Windows Vista, Atlas, and Avalon and things like that. I am not going to talk about those things today. So if you're disappointed, hopefully you'll like the things I have to say about Blue Dragon 7. The reason is these topics were put together about 3 or 4 months ago. At that time, Windows Vista was targeted at the end of this year. Since then, if you follow Windows Vista, you know that those technologies have slipped well into 2007, and so we thought that rather than talk about things that might happen a year from now, you would be more interested in hearing about things that are actually going to happen within the next few months. So realize that there might be a slight change from your expectations, but I hope that you still get a lot out of this talk today. In fact, I hope that you get more than you expected. So let's talk about Blue Dragon 7, the schedule. As I mentioned, we're targeting late July or early August. We actually are very near code complete on all the features of Blue Dragon 7. We've got to go through some regression testing, some performance testing, build the installers, and that's basically what's left to do. Of course, the problem is July is vacation season for everybody, so that tends to put a hitch in the works. There will be announcements on Blue Dragon interest mailing list. Any of you that are familiar with Blue Dragon, we do keep a mailing list that if you're interested in subscribing to. It's relatively low traffic. We average 4 to 6 email messages a day, so it's not like CF Talk that's going to flood your inbox. If you want to subscribe to Blue Dragon Interest, there will be an announcement there. That's the first place that the beta availability will be announced. We will also send an announcement to CF Talk. We'll also put it up on my blog. If you monitor Full as a Goog, which is a blog aggregator, you know that my blog is there. So those would be the places to look. Or you could just check back on our website in early August on the downloads page. It will be very prominent. And in fact, probably it will be prominently on the home page of our website. You'll be able to find it. Again, late July, probably early August, that beta is going to be released. The final release of Blue Dragon 7 we would be targeting for mid-October. The beta period is always relatively unpredictable. It depends on what kind of issues and problems we come up with. So, but you know, 6 weeks or I'm sorry, that would be 10 weeks is usually a pretty good time to get from beta to a final release. So let's talk about the features. Again, as I mentioned earlier, all the features that I mentioned are in all Blue Dragon editions unless I specifically note that it's not in a particular edition. So these are all the Java editions as well as the .NET editions of Blue Dragon. The most exciting feature that I'm actually going to show in some detail is the ability to do multi-threaded programming with some new tags that we've introduced, CF Thread, CF Join. There's some other functions that go along with that, and again, we're going to go into that into a lot of detail. There are some enhancements to the CF query tag. We've added a cached until change attribute. This attribute only works on BlueDragon.net and only on SQL Server 2005 because it's basically a feature that's enabled by those products. Again, anyone that was here this morning, this actually, I figured out why it didn't work. It had to do with the network connection not being set up properly, and that demo is going to work this morning. That's a really neat feature. It basically allows you, if you're familiar with the cached within attribute of CF query, the problem with cached within is always, well, what's the time interval, right? Is it a minute, is it a day, is it an hour? And there's always a time period where you can have stale data in the cache. With the cached until change, you never have stale data in the cache, and you never make more queries than you have to, because the way this feature works is the database notifies Blue Dragon when the data has changed, and therefore to refresh its cache. And I'll talk about that some more. The background attribute basically allows you, this is a performance feature, if particularly if you're doing inserts. The classic case of this is if you've implemented a custom logging and you want to insert data into a database to log requests at the end of every request, this allows you to do it on a background thread. So the idea is once you put this background attribute on a CF query, that query actually does not get executed immediately. It gets queued up for processing in the background, and I'll talk some more about that later. We're adding null as a keyword to the CFML language, so you can actually use null in CFML expressions, and there's a new isNull function that will allow you to test complex variables to see if they're null, and I'm going to talk about and demonstrate that as well, and what that's good for. And we will be adding support for interfaces for CFCs. This is a really detailed topic that I'm actually not going to go into any more detail today. So if you want to talk some more about this, then we can do that offline. Everything that I showed here on this page are all unique features to Blue Dragon. These are features that you're not going to find in an alternate product such as CFMX. These are new features that we're adding that you're only going to get in Blue Dragon 7. Some features that we're going to add in Blue Dragon 7 that we are pulling from CFMX are adding application CFC support. We are making some enhancements to application CFC. If you're familiar with application CFC, you know there's on-application start, on-session start handlers. We're actually adding an on-client start handler so that you can take action when a new client is created. We're also adding an on-missing template handler so that you can put basically application-specific missing template handlers within your code. So those are two enhancements that we're adding to the application CFC. Otherwise, we will support application CFC exactly as it is in CFMX 7 today. We are adding CF document to Blue Dragon, both the Java and .NET editions. We are not going to support Flash paper as a format. We will support PDF as a CF document format. But in addition, we are also going to support PNG and JPEG as output formats for CF document, and that's got some interesting little capabilities. You can create thumbnails of websites and which is kind of neat, and I'll show that. Also, if you're familiar with CFMX 7, you know that in CFMX 7 standard, the CF document tag is single-threaded. Only a single request at a time can render a CF document tag. You have to buy CFMX Enterprise in order to get multi-threaded CF document. We are including multi-threading support in our lowest level product, which is Blue Dragon Server JX, which is a $899 product. You'll be able to do multi-threaded CF document. CF document is not supported in the free version of Blue Dragon, so it will not be supported at all in the free version. We're also adding CF chart to Blue Dragon. That's a feature that is currently not in Blue Dragon 6. And we've made some enhancements, again, that I'll show you. Probably the most interesting one is CF chart image allows you to put background images on charts. But things like it, doing legends and titles or some enhanced capabilities of CF chart that you'll find only in Blue Dragon. Just continuing some of the existing features in Blue Dragon that we're enhancing. CF search currently only does English, currently only does text documents. We're adding Word and PDF. And we're adding, I think it's 18 different languages other than English. CF timer is a new CFMX 7 tag that we're putting in Blue Dragon. There are some SOAP-related functions that are new in CFMX 7. We're adding those in Blue Dragon. And there's another whole sort of list of miscellaneous things that have been done in CFMX 7, some security-related changes that allow you to specify algorithms for the random. There's a new isValid function, that there's some new validations for CFParam, basically all the miscellaneous little things that they've done in CFMX 7. So essentially, with Blue Dragon 7, we're bringing it up to par with CFMX 7, and of course we're adding the enhancements that I've listed, talked about previously. We're also adding support for MySQL 5.0. Any of you who use MySQL know that stored procedures are the big new feature of MySQL 5. We do have stored procedure support, including BlueDragon.net supports MySQL 5 stored procedures. We are adding native 64-bit support on both Windows and Linux, both Java and .NET. We're doing performance enhancements, always do performance enhancements every release, and of course, the ever popular bug fixes. To be complete, there are three major features of CFMX 7 that we are not supporting in Blue Dragon 7. That is the event gateways, flash forms, and the reporting services. So these features, if you, you know, are absolutely critical features for you, just be aware they are not in, they are not going to be in Blue Dragon 7. Other than that, anything in CFMX 7 is going to be in Blue Dragon 7. Okay, multi-threaded programming. Let's talk about, you know, what multi-threaded programming is. It's the ability to have two or more paths through your code executing simultaneously. Okay, a thread is a execution path through our code. And the interesting thing about multi-threaded programming is that you already do multi-threaded programming. Okay, if you program on ColdFusion or you program on Blue Dragon, you're already aware that multiple requests can execute at the same time through your code. So that you have to be aware of, for example, any of the shared scopes, application scope, session scope, you know that you have to, that there can be two threads, there can be two requests running through there. So the concepts of multi-threading are not new, okay, and are not unique. What is new is that we're now going to give you the ability to create new threads in addition to your request thread to do extra work for you while you're processing the request. And I'll show you why that can be useful. So again, multi-threading, don't be scared of it. It's a concept that you should be familiar with because of the multi-request, but you now we're going to let you create your own threads and do work on those threads. So here's kind of an illustration of how it works. The new tag we have is CF thread. Very simply, you take a CF thread, any tag that exists in the CF thread body gets executed on a separate thread from the request thread. So what I've got illustrated here in the kind of white color, think of this as your request thread. It's executing top to bottom down your CFML page. It hits a CF thread tag, and now it breaks into two. And now you've got two paths executing down your page at the same time. So the idea is that your request thread, as soon as it hits the CF thread tag, Blue Dragon spins off a new thread. The request thread immediately continues executing after the closing CF thread tag. It just keeps going. The CF thread body is now executing in parallel at the same time. Okay, so I hope some of you are thinking, wow, I know great things I could do with that. If not, I'll show you some great things that you can do with that. How long does a thread live? Okay, the new thread that you create with CF thread lives until it gets to the bottom of the CF thread tag. Okay, the interesting thing about that is that the CF thread could live longer or shorter than the original request thread that started it. So you're used to the fact that when a request comes in, it executes your page from top to bottom. When it gets to the bottom, the request is finished, the thread goes away. Same thing with the new CF thread. It executes from the top of the opening CF thread tag to the bottom, and then it goes away. But depending on what your code is doing, that CF thread could finish before the request is done, or the request could finish and that other thread could still be running. Okay, so important thing to realize that the lifetime of that CF thread can outlive the request thread that created it. Okay, or it could die sooner. Which leads to a question is, when you create a thread using CF thread, how do you know if it's still running? Okay, that's sort of one of the first sort of problems that you have. So let's take a look at that. So here's what the code would look like. The CF thread tag takes an optional name parameter. Okay, if you want to know, if you just want to start a thread and let it run and you don't care when it ends or you don't care about that thread anymore, you don't have to use the name parameter, you just let it go. Okay, but if you want to keep track of that thread, what you have to do is give it a name. Think of this exactly as a CF query. When you do CF query name, what happens? You get a query variable in the variable scope or in whatever scope that you use the name. Same thing with CF thread. So in this case, I give it the name my thread. When my request continues processing at the closing CF thread, there's now a thread variable in the variable scope called my thread, and I've got a thread is alive function. So what I'm doing here is presumably my thread is still running when my request gets here. So I say CF if thread is alive, then that's how I can test if my thread is still running. And there's some other uses of this that I'll show later. But realize, the key point is to realize that there is a way to figure out if it's alive if you have the variable. The other things you can do is you can check the thread running time. There's a thread running time function that you can use, pass the thread, and it will tell you how long the thread has been running. Another important thing, concept to be aware of is you can actually have one thread wait for another thread to finish running. Okay, and what we do the terminology for that is a join, and these are not terms we created. These are standard terms. If you've ever done any Java programming or C programming, the notion of joining a thread basically means I'm going to wait for this thread to finish before I continue. And so the idea here is I've created a thread called my thread. Remember now that the request thread starts executing after the closing CF thread tag. What I'm doing here is I'm using the CF join tag, and what the CF join tag says is I want my request thread to stop right here and don't go anywhere until my thread is finished. Okay, and so what this allows you to do is synchronize threads. It's just a fancy term, like I said, that says I want to wait and I don't want to go on. And again, I've got an example of why you would want to do that. In fact, that's actually critical that you be able to do that in multi-threaded programming. There's also a thread join function that does the same thing as the CF join tag if you just happen to prefer the CF script or that type of syntax. Okay. We know how to create a thread, right? I've already showed you how to do that. We know how to see if a thread is running. We know how to wait for a thread to stop running. Now we need to know how do we pass data to a thread. All right, so we're running our request. We want to create a thread, we want to pass data to it. The first thing to realize is that when you create that new thread in the CF thread body, the only variable scope that it can access is the application scope and the server scope. Okay? It does not get access to CGI, it does not get access to request, it does not get access to session or client. The only thing it gets access to is the server scope and the application scope, and then it gets its own variable scope. Okay, so it has a variable scope, but it's not the same variable scope as the request thread that created it. It's its own brand new one. So think of it like a custom tag that way. Right, when you call a custom tag, it gets its own variable scope. When you create a CF thread, it gets its own variable scope. But the difference is, unlike a custom tag, it doesn't get access to the caller scope. And the reason that we do this is you don't want the request thread and the CF thread to be writing to the same scopes, because now you're going to have issues of concurrency. It's the same issues you have with the application scope. The reason we let you inherit the application scope is because most of you should be familiar with issues of reading and writing variables and using CF lock to the application scope. We didn't want you to worry about that for the other scopes. So there's two ways to pass data to a thread. One, you can write an application scope variable, and that's what I'm showing here. So what I'm doing is I'm saying CF set application.dsn equals my data source. Inside the thread, I'm using application.dsn. I'm referencing that. So that's one way to pass data. Of course, you can use the server scope, but we all know that you really don't use the server scope for that purpose. It's not recommended. The second thing that you can do is you can pass attributes. So in this case, on my CF thread tag, I've put first name John, last name Smith, and notice within the thread body, I say attributes.firstname, attributes.lastname. Again, very similar to a custom tag, you have an attribute scope. So again, two ways to pass data to a thread. You can use the application scope, or you can pass attributes to it. Okay. So now we know how to pass data to a thread. How do we get data back from the thread when it's done running? Presumably, if we ask a thread to do some work for us, we want to know what the results of that work are. Basically, what happens is if I create a thread variable, so in this case, I've created CF thread, I've given a name, my thread, I've set a message. So if I do the CF set message, that message variable gets created in the variable scope, the variable scope of the thread, not the variable scope of the request. I do a CF join, which is my request thread, says wait for the CF thread to finish. What happens when the CF thread's done is its entire variable scope now becomes available in the thread variable. Okay, so the request thread can now read my thread, which was the thread variable, it can read that message. So key point to remember, only after the CF thread is finished. So prior to, while the CF thread is still running, that my thread is going to be empty. It's not going to have anything in it. Only when it's done do you then have access to the entire variable scope of the CF thread? So we'll get questions to the end. I know this is a lot of information I'm throwing at you, but I think the examples are going to make all this clear. Let me just make one note in case you're really excited about this. The variable scope that I just told you about, we're actually probably going to change that implementation because we found one that we think is a little bit better. But let me show you. The idea is that the thread variable, in this case I've created a thread variable called myThread. The idea is it's rather than having the whole variable scope of the thread, it's going to have two fixed fields. It's going to have one called generated content, and it's going to have one called return variable. So the idea is that within the thread, you would put a CF return just like you put in a function, and whatever you return from the thread would then get assigned to the return variable field. And that could actually be a complex variable. So you could return a structure, okay? So the idea is that rather than exposing the entire variable scope, we're only going to, the CF thread is only going to expose what it wants to return back to the request thread. And I think that's a nicer implementation. Also, we're going to add this generated content, so you could actually have a CF thread create some HTML output, right? And then you can take that output and actually get access to it from the generated content. So the reason that I'm putting this here is this implementation I don't have on. The implementation I'm going to show you is the variables scope implementation, but when you get the beta, read the documentation, is probably going to be changed to be this. And this has got some advantages. Now we're going to do the demos. Okay. So what I've done here is I've got a stock ticker example, and thanks to Josh, we actually found a web service. Is that font good in the back? What I've got is, and I want to go through this get stock quote function because I reuse it in the rest of the example, so we're going to go through it one time so you can figure it out. Basically, what the get stock quote does is we pass it a ticker symbol, which is a string. We create a structure that we're going to return. Yep, so the return type is a struct. And then all we do is we invoke this web service, okay, which is a external web service that gets us the stock quote. We take the price and the time of the quote, and we return that as the structure. So very simple function. We're going to give it a stock symbol. We're going to get back a quote and the price and a structure, okay? And there's a little bit of error catching here. If it's an error, it actually returns error instead of price and time, but that's error handling. So basically what I've got is I've got a page that's going to go out and get the Adobe stock quote, okay? And I want to show you, let's go ahead and run that page. And we've got debug output, and so it took 531, there we go, much better, 140, 130, 141, 140. So running one iteration of this web service takes about 140 milliseconds. Does everyone see what I'm referring to, the execution times at the bottom? Okay, so about 130, 140 milliseconds, relatively slow operation. I mean, that's a relatively long time for a page that's not doing much, and it's because it's an external web service we're going out and getting it. So now, let's look at the next page. Now I'm going to get four quotes on this page. I'm going to get Adobe, BEA, Microsoft, and Red Hat. So what's going to happen to my time? It's going to take about four times as long to do this quote. And let's see. 771, 601. Let's see, that one, 601 again. So ticks about what you would expect. Every time I add a new quote, it's another 130, 140 milliseconds. So if I put a quote page together, every time I go to get new quotes, I'm extending the length of time that's going to take me to retrieve those quotes. Now watch what we can do with threading. I'm going to take each of those quotes, and I'm simply going to run it within a separate thread. Okay, so what's going to happen is in my request thread, first I'm going to spin off a thread to go get the Adobe quote, then I'm going to spin off a thread to go get the BEA quote, another one to get the Microsoft quote, And I'm going to go ahead and run the Red Hat quote on the request thread. I don't need to create more threads than necessary, right? By that point, I've got four threads. I'm going to get all four of them going at the same time. I'm going to join the request thread. When the request thread is done with the Red Hat quote, I'm going to say, wait for the others to finish. Hopefully, they've already finished already, so that wait might not even take any time. And then I'm going to go ahead and print out the values, right? Remember that, let's look at like the Adobe. So remember, our way of passing data back is we simply write this quote variable into the variable scope, and then we're going to read it back out here, adobe.quote.price. Let me point out one other thing that's very interesting here. Notice that I said earlier that when I created the CF thread that I don't inherit the variable scope of the page. The CF thread gets its own separate variable scope. But where is get stock quote? Get stock quote is actually defined later on in the page. So the CF thread actually can invoke any of the UDFs that are defined on the page, even though it's got its own separate variable scope. But let's see what happens if we run this. Well, you see, because I already ran the demo one time. Right, well, that one was a little slow. Well, 580, whoops. Yeah, it's very, you're going out over the internet, so it's not always predictable. So 230, 420, 220, 200, so 500. So I'm getting a little variability there, but you can see that I'm a lot closer back to the 140 that it took to get one request. So now I'm running four requests in maybe, you know, twice as much time or less. So in that case, it only took 230 milliseconds. Whereas running them serially, which is the way that you have to do it now, you're always going to be up over 600 milliseconds, right? So the idea is I've taken, you know, four tasks that run one after the other take a long time. There's no reason why I shouldn't be able to run them in parallel. I've run them in parallel. I've reduced the response time of my request. And so this example can be applied to any long-running operation. So if you have a long database query, if you have a page and you've got to make five database queries, okay, and maybe two of those are related to each other and two of them are related to each other but not related to the first two, you could spin off two separate threads, run the first two queries on one thread, run the second two queries on another thread, and you're going to reduce the response time of your page by doing multiple tasks at the same time. File system operations take a long time. LDAP queries, CFHTTP. Any time you're doing multiple things in sequence on a page that are long running, those are things that you want to look at and say, gee, maybe I can, you know, multi-thread this and get better response time by doing multiple things in parallel. Let me show you one final thing that is even better. We know that this quote service, the stock quotes aren't updated continuously. They're only updated every minute or every 5 minutes. I'm not sure what it is. So there's really no reason for me to get those quotes every time. Let me show you, this is a bit trickier example, but I think it shows even more of the power of the multi-threading. What I'm going to do is I've got an application CFC, and in my on application start, the first thing I'm going to do is invoke get all quotes. Now my get all quotes is a method on my CFC that's going to do a little bit different. It's actually going to assign the results to values in the application scope. Okay? So anybody see where I'm headed with this? I'm going to get the quotes, I'm going to put them in the application scope, and then I'm going to create a new thread. And I'm going to put that thread into a loop. And what the condition on the loop is this application scope.isActive variable. And I'll show you why that's important later. Effectively, I'm going to put this thread into a loop that's going to run for as long as my application is alive. Okay? And what this is going to do is it's going to go to sleep for 10 seconds. CF pause is a tag that Blue Dragon actually introduced several versions ago that basically just says go to sleep, right, for 10 seconds. I'm going to update all the quotes log that the fact that this happened, and then I'm going to go back to the top of the loop and go to sleep again. Okay, so what I've done is I've created here in my on application start method. So when my application starts, I've created a thread now that's going to run as long as the application is alive, and it's going to update that quote every 10 seconds. Now, maybe 10 seconds isn't the right number. Maybe it's a minute. Maybe my quote service only updates every 20 minutes, so I go to sleep for 20 minutes. Okay. So now I've always got the latest quote in the application scope. And so what I'm going to do now in my stock, I'm just going to read. I'm not going to invoke the web service. I'm just going to read the values out of the application scope. And of course, this is going to run a whole lot faster. And let me just show you. We've got some logging here. Let's see where my BlueDragon.net work. I haven't logged anything yet, so there's no CF log directory. Whoops. So let's go ahead and run stock 4. And there I've got my quotes. And if I look here, oh, you know what? I'm looking in the wrong place. Okay, so if I open my CF log directory, oops, I should have cleaned it out first. And I've got some errors there, but you'll notice, what time is it? Is it, today's the 29th, right? 4:46, my stock thread started at that point. That's where, here's my cursor here. If you go back to my application CFC, notice that that's this CF log. Okay, stock thread started, and hopefully 10 seconds has gone by. And if I open it again, it should tell me it's actually updated it twice, if you can see that lower right. Okay, so now we know our thread's running, right? So every 10 seconds it's going in and it's updating, and I just threw the log in there so I could show you that it's really running. Let me show you one more thing before we're done. Having a thread run forever is not necessarily a good thing. So what we're going to do is in our on application end. So now, again, I assume everyone's familiar with application CFC, or at least can sort of get what's going on here. Okay, application CFC replaces application CFM. The on application start handler gets invoked when the application starts up. On application end gets invoked when the application ends. So notice that, remember that is active flag, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to set the is active flag false, and that's going to tell my thread here, remember I was looping based on that flag. All right, so I've used this flag to now tell my thread, okay, you can stop now. The other interesting thing that I'm going to do is see this CF interrupt tag. Again, CF interrupt is standard sort of thread terminology in computer science world. Basically, it says wake the thread up. Well, why would I need to wake the thread up? Remember the CF pause? Well, that CF pause interval could be 20 minutes, right? Well, I don't want to wait 20 minutes for that thread to wake up to check the loop again and quit. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to use the interrupt to basically say, okay, wake up now. Don't wait for your CF pause timeout, which is going to cause it to then execute the loop and then quit. So that's how I've terminated my thread, is basically by those two things. Signal is active, and then just for good measure, this isn't really necessary, I do a CF join to say, okay, basically I'm not going to continue until I know that he's finished, right? So I've signaled the thread to quit, I've interrupted it in case it's sleeping, then I've said, okay, now I'm going to wait till he's done. Like I said, that's not really necessary. So that's if you can imagine this general mechanism of being able to create a background thread, there's lots and lots of things that you could do with this, right? That this is like almost like a supercharged replacement for CF schedule, right? You could put any kind of code that you wanted that you needed to run on a periodic basis, right? Create a background thread at application start time and have it running. Oh. Well, duh. It executes in 0 milliseconds, right? Because all we're doing is reading application scope variables, right? And always getting the latest updated data. Yes, there is. The best thing to do, how do I want to answer this question? One thing that you can do is in your CF thread, put a try-catch inside of the CF thread. You could put the CF thread itself inside a try-catch so that your request, actually you probably don't want to do the latter because you don't know, the thing you got to remember is the request thread might not be alive, right, at the time. If you're familiar with application CFC, your on error handler will get invoked, and your on error handler will get invoked even if the thread was not created within the application CFC. Okay, so if you were running a request and you created a separate CF thread, the request thread finishes. Okay, later that thread throws an exception. If you've defined an on error handler, it will get invoked. And there will be a new exception type event name associated with that. We're still working out some of the details of that, to be honest with you. Okay, but that will all be documented. And yes, we realize we need a very robust error handling technique in there. Wow, this took longer than I thought, which is actually good. If y'all come to the keynote tomorrow, I'm covering all this again. So you can go tell everybody, wow, you got to come to the keynote and see. And actually, this would be really great if y'all could help me out. When I get to this point and pause and say, well, what do you think? That's the applause line. And that's when you all, you know, cheer and start to cheer. Yes. So the question is server resource considerations as you start doing the multi-threading. The only answer is it depends. The raw amount of memory, for example, that it takes to run a thread is actually not very much. Okay, it's almost negligible. But as soon as you start packing data in your variable scope, of course, so that's going to be dependent on your code, right? How much memory it takes. And again, how much processing time it takes, it depends on what you're doing, right, and what your code is doing. In this example, if I had this thread sleeping for 20 minutes, for example, and we know that it takes about 140 milliseconds for each one of those web service requests, that means every 20 minutes I'm putting 140, you know, I'm putting 600 milliseconds of processing requirement on my server. It's nothing, okay? One thing that you probably don't want to do is spin off 6 threads for every request. So the first example I gave is probably not really a good one. Okay, you don't want to spin off 3 threads every single request. Okay, that's overkill. You want to be a little bit judicious about how you use this. And I was just trying to illustrate, you know, I sort of came up with an extreme example to illustrate it. So you know, if you find yourself in a case where you're doing that, you probably want to look and say, well, gee, is a background thread make more sense? So the short answer to your question is the raw overhead is minimal, right? It really depends what you're doing on that thread. Yes. Yes, the question is, in the new implementation of the return variables, can I simply pass the entire variable scope back as a struct? And the answer is yes, of course you could. You could do that, because that could be any complex variable, just like a CF function return. So it could be a query variable, it could be a struct, it could be whatever you want, CFC. Okay, if there are no more questions, I'm gonna move on to the next demo, and this is gonna be the cached until change. And if this works, please give me an applause this time, because I was so embarrassed this morning when this didn't work. As I mentioned, I think I mentioned earlier, the cached until change, let's just show the example. So what I've got is, I've got a simple page with 2 queries that I'm querying my employees database. And the first query, I'm going to get all the engineers, And in the second query, I'm going to get all the salespeople. And the only thing that's different about this than any code you've ever written or seen before is we've added this cached until change attribute, okay, to each one of these queries. So let's take a look and see what that looks like. Okay, now the first time it runs it, of course, there's a little bit of startup time for the page, but it's going to tell me that the SQL came from a cache refresh. Well, we know it wasn't a cache refresh, it was the first time, right? It was the first time it did the query. Now it's got the query in the cache. It showed me cache refresh. If I refresh this page now, notice it's telling me that it got the SQL from the cache, right? Which is what we expect. So every time I refresh, I'm getting the query from the cache. I'm getting 0 millisecond execution times. Now, let's see what happens if CF query and employee. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to add a new employee to my database, and we're going to add Miss Lori Pacheco, if I can spell Pacheco, to the engineering department. Very important to spell this right. Okay, so Lori was added correctly, and so now when I refresh, drum roll please. Okay, perfect. So notice, yeah, thank you. So notice that the engineers actually did a cache refresh. It knows the data changed. So the way it knows is because, again, this is a new feature of SQL Server 2005 and .NET 2.0. What happened was BlueDragon, when it made the query, it registered with SQL Server and said, tell me when any of the data changes. So when the data changed, we got a notification back from SQL Server, at which point we invalidated the cache, and then the next time the page was hit, we knew, okay, go get the data again. Notice that the sales did not change, right? We pulled them still from cache, so it's selective. It's not the whole database that changed. It knows that only the data associated with that query. So you've got a perfect caching mechanism that you're never going to have stale data in the cache, and you're only going to refresh the cache when it's necessary. Question? It's based on the query, but there are certain limitations, such as you can't use top. Okay. There are some restrictions. Basically, any of the aggregate functions you can't use. You can't use the aggregate functions in the query, and have that work. There's some limitations on what it can do. Okay. That's it. I can add another one. I can add. Josh, are you sales or engineering? Josh Adams. We'll do Josh in sales today. And this time when I refresh, notice that this time we got a cache refresh on the sales, but we did not get a cache refresh on the end. I know I had to do it twice because, you know, this morning it didn't work. Okay. So that's good stuff. So what do we have next? Oh, null. Okay. Let's take a look and see what null is good for. Okay, so has anyone done a lot of CFC programming? Okay, then you hopefully will recognize this particular problem. If I have a CFC, so I'm going to create a CFC, and what I've got is an init method, and the idea is that I'm going to pass an employee ID to this CFC. It's going to query the database to get that employee, and then it's going to return a employee. Here's my return type. Notice my return type is the employee CFC. And that's how I'm going to create an instance of an employee CFC. As I'm going to give it the employee ID, it's going to query the database, it's going to populate the values, and I'm going to get it back. Now the problem is, what happens if that employee ID doesn't exist? What do I do? Okay. One thing I can do is throw an exception. That's kind of not nice, because then the person that calls your code has to put it in a try catch and has to know what to do, right, to handle that exceptions. Plus, exceptions are not really good for performance. So if it's expected path to your code that you will get invalid employee IDs coming through, then exceptions are not the best case. The classic example in, like, if you're a Java programmer facing this problem is you want to return null, You want to return an object that basically is a null object, and that's exactly what we're going to do with Blue Dragon, is by adding this new null return value. The key point is that the null return value is going to match the type of any CFC. Okay, and again, if you've done a lot of CFC programming, you understand this problem. If you don't, it's kind of a subtle thing. But let me show you how you would use this. Here, in this case, I've set an employee ID. Let's set it to 1, since I know employee ID 1 exists. I'm going to do create object. So I'm going to say CF set employee equals create object of, whoops, I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to do that. Of type employee, and then I'm going to invoke the init method with employee ID. Again, if you've done a lot of CFC programming, this is kind of a classic style of creating objects with an init method. But the thing that I need to do is I need to see if it is null using the new isNull function. And if I get isNull, then I'm going to handle that and say, oh, that employee doesn't exist. Otherwise, I've got a good object, and I'm just going to dump the employee back. Okay, so I've shown an example of the null keyword and the isNull function. And if we run this against my database, let's see. Not CF query. This is the null keyword. I'm going to do get employee, and it's going to tell me, okay, so employee number 1 exists. It's going to dump the data back out. If I edit this, and I'm going to put, let's put an invalid 1, and this time if I run it, it's going to tell me, sorry, employee 123 does not exist. So just a nice little a programming feature, but one that's really been lacking in Cold Fusion, one of those sort of holes in CFML. The other nice thing that you can do with null is everyone is familiar with the concept that your database can contain null. Well, what happens if you return a null value from a database in Cold Fusion? You get an empty string, okay? Which is okay, I guess, but one of the problems is you don't have a way of distinguishing. Sometimes you want to know, was it an empty string or was it a null? Well, one of the things that Blue Dragon is going to allow you to do now is say, does that value equal null? Or I can use the isNull function. Since this is a simple value, I can say equals null. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to select from my employee's database where email is null, so I know that I get some null values back. And then one thing that I want to point out, because this is a complaint that people get, this implementation is fully backwards compatible with Blue Dragon 6 and all your existing code. Okay. So if you have existing code that works in Blue Dragon 6 or CFMX 7, and you want to run it on Blue Dragon 7, it's still going to work the same. In other words, we're still going to treat database nulls as empty strings. And I want to show you that by what I'm going to do is I'm going to output the empty string. I'm going to do a query, a CFIF, to see if it equals the empty string. But then I'm going to apply my null conditional checks and see what happens. And let me just show you really quick what that looks like. And so you can see, I did a query, I got some null values for email. Email is an empty string. Yes, I passed the CFIF to say it's an empty string. Yes, it passed the equal null test. And yes, it's still null when I did the is null. So one of the things that you're gonna be able to do in Blue Dragon now is to apply the equals null or is null function to database values to determine, well, gee, was it really null or was it an empty string? Nothing at all. One of the things that you'll notice is that, and in fact, if you take Blue Dragon 6.2 today and do a CF dump, you'll notice that it displays them as this. It's got this little null inside the CF dump. Blue Dragon already keeps track internally of was it a null or not. Whereas if you do this on Cold Fusion, it's going to show empty string, right? Basically, Cold Fusion forgets that it was ever a null value. Blue Dragon simply keeps track of that, and then either treats it as an empty string, if that's what you want to do with it, or it will allow you to do it as null. Tell you what, let me just see how far I've got to go. Let's jump ahead and look at the CF document, the PNG and JPEG. That's a quick one, and then we'll see if we can get some questions. So I assume most people are familiar with CF document and what it does. And so what I'm going to do, I'll tell you what, let's just go right to the browser. Back PDF document. And here's a thumbnails example. And whoops, it says, could not be loaded due to an internal error. Well, that's what I get for not testing these things before. Let's see if this is, yeah, okay, something's wrong. Something's hosed with my installation. So, oh, you know what? I bet I don't have, no, that could be it. Okay, never mind. Oh, I know, wait a minute, let me think about this for a minute. I know what the problem is. I'm running on BlueDragon.net, and CF document isn't implemented on BlueDragon.net yet, so I have to show you on J2E edition of BlueDragon. So let me make sure that's running. Yes, yeah, so the point that Josh was making is that yes, it will be implemented on all the products, it's just that it's not implemented on .NET just yet. Let's see if my server's running. It should have been running. Nope. Let's go to services. And let's see. Gotta get that guy. Gotta remember to start that service. Okay, now it's gonna work. So give it a chance to fire up and it's saying no. Let's try it again. Thought I had it. Oh, I'm on 88. Okay. No, I don't understand. All right, so let's go back to, let's take a look at some of the CF chart. My apologies on that. I don't know what the issue is. So let's take a look at CF chart. I don't know what this is. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, while that's running, here's a CF chart example. It's showing a few of simple enhancements that we've made. The CF chart image allowed us to put the BlueDragon shield as a background image on the chart. CF chart title allowed us to do the open bugs title, and that title can be positioned top or bottom. It has some other control the font and size. CF chart legend allowed us to add a legend to the chart, and these are all enhancements that are not available in the current CFMX implementation of CF chart. So these are things that we've added to it. And actually, if I go back to my CF document, it looks like my server's running now. And let's do the thumbnails image. And it takes a little while because it's got to run out. I think we're doing Yahoo and two other sites. So it's got to run out there and get them. And let's see if our network's going to respond. So there we go. So what we've done is we've actually used CF document to create thumbnails of Yahoo, Google, and New Atlantis homepage. And I don't think there are any active links there, but you can see, you know, you could put links to that and click to it, and it's just kind of a neat little enhancement. You can imagine using CF document to create your own JPEG or PNG images based on, you know, just like you would use the CF document tag today, but instead of creating a PDF, you create a JPEG. The one limitation of PNG or JPEG is it only creates a single page. So unlike a PDF, which can create a multi-page document, you can only create a single image on a PNG and JPEG. And I think that's about it. I think there's some stuff I didn't show, but it's not really that terribly exciting as far as the demo. The on-missing template handler, as I mentioned, is simply a new handler on the application CFC that it contains a single argument, the target page, which is the same argument that some of the other handlers take. And basically, anytime you request a page within this application that doesn't exist, this on missing template handler would get invoked, which would allow you to implement some custom file not found processing on your website. Maybe you want to somebody's trying to hack your site by editing the URLs, or you know, and this is a way that you could capture that and pass back whatever information or do whatever handling you want to do for file not found. And the key is that it's specific to this application, okay? Unlike the global file not found missing template handler, which is site wide. Notice that the on missing template handler does take a return code, true or false. What that means is if you return true, that tells Blue Dragon, yes, I handled this, we're done with it. If you return false, then Blue Dragon goes on and invokes the site-wide missing template handler if you did one, or sends a 404 back to the browser if that is the case may be. So that allows you to control that. So nice little enhancement there. And I think with that, I'm done. So questions? These will all be documented with the beta documentation when the product is released. There will be a document that describes all of this. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. We're going to have the drawing.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.